FM HD1 Evanston, Chicago. I'm Gabby Shell, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, President Donald Trump's inauguration, an analysis of Bad Bunny's new album art. How useful are New Year's resolutions, really? The latest in Northwestern sports, and our new poetry segment, Well Versed. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. President Donald Trump moved Monday's inauguration parade indoors to Capital One Arena. Edward Simon Cruz and Rachel Spears are reporting for Medill News Service from Washington, D.C. They spent several hours in line with some of Trump's biggest supporters.
When we arrived at the Capital One Arena, the line to enter already stretched more than two blocks. It was 5:45 a.m., and the doors wouldn't open until 8. President Donald Trump wouldn't arrive until about 5 p.m. after being sworn in for a second term. The long lines and below-freezing temperatures didn't deter Trump's supporters, some of whom had spent the night in the queue.
Trump announced last week that he was moving his inauguration ceremony indoors. He took the oath of office inside the Capitol Rotunda, not outdoors as originally planned. Instead of spreading out along the National Mall, his supporters filed into Capital One Arena for the president's inaugural parade. Patricia Foley waited in line for more than 4 hours before entering the arena. She drove to D.C. from Berwyn, Pennsylvania on Saturday night. She jokes about the snow, which lengthened the 2.5-hour drive to about 4.5 hours.
I wonder if it was political.
But Foley says the drive was worth it. She enjoys gathering with other Trump supporters.
This is once in a lifetime. You know, we had an opportunity to see, we lived in Philadelphia when Ronald Reagan was taken back to D.C. We had an opportunity to go see that, and we didn't. And we thought, we'll never have that. We'll never do that again. We're going to take every opportunity that we have.
We also spoke with Spring, who did not share her last name. Spring wore a baseball cap bedazzled with the American flag. She came from the Dallas area with her husband and granddaughter because she enjoys the ambiance.
To be here in presence with everybody that supported this man, to know that we won again, and just to be a part of history.
She sees the inauguration as the beginning of a new era, free of high grocery and gas prices she blames on Joe Biden's presidency.
The reset is just to get us back to our morals and our basic, you know, just ethics, and get us back to where Abraham was, and do what we have to do as a nation, as a republic. We have went so far left since Abraham Lincoln and the meaning of what being an American is.
Catherine, who also shared only her first name, used to work in public education. She says public education systems frequently teach anti-American messages.
We may still have different views, but we can still respect each other's differences. That's very different from, if you don't agree with me, I'm going to try to cancel you, I'm going to try to ruin your life, ruin your career, and make sure you can never get a job again, which we've seen happen over the last 4 years multiple times.
Catherine says America was founded on Judeo-Christian values like life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. She says some people are shying away from civil discourse. Instead, they try to, quote, cancel those who disagree with them.
We were never founded on socialism and Marxism. If somebody wants to be a communist, more power to you. Go move to Cuba, go move to China, go move to North Korea, go move to Vietnam. They will welcome you with open arms. But don't try to put that in here. That's not where we're founded on. Because if the United States falls, where else are the refugees of the world going to go?
The three women have different hopes for Trump's second term. Catherine says she trusts the president's leadership, especially given his experience as a businessman.
He actually follows through on both his promises and his threats. There were absolutely no wars during his first term, and we had the strongest economy we had in years, and he's actually going back to more of the tariff and sanction system, which was better for the United States because under that system, we actually didn't have income tax for a good long time, and the economy is much stronger for everybody, including those who just have general jobs and aren't making, say, 6 or 7 figures.
Spring looks forward to policy changes that would benefit her family and her community.
The border, or border protection, I would like to see taxes cut. I would like to see lower the inflation to be lowered. people be able to work and make a living and not have to struggle and worry where's their next meal coming from.
Frawley says Trump would allow families to maintain generational wealth. That would create a better future for her children and grandchildren.
We're Americans and we can't wait for him to be in office because we believe in him. And, you know, he's just like you and me.
Edward Simon Cruz with Rachel Spears, Medill News Service.
Bad Bunny's new album has been on repeat for so many. Lyrics have been translated and dissected in more ways than one. But what about the album cover? Naya Ray spoke with Latino listeners to find out what two empty chairs mean to them.
When I saw the album cover, it feels like home.
On January 5th, Bad Bunny released his sixth studio album, Divi Tiran Mas Fotos, and it has since risen to the number one spot on the Billboard 200. Since the release, Bad Bunny has been on the press circuit calling the album his most Puerto Rican album ever. But perhaps the most Puerto Rican thing, the most Latino thing about the album, isn't the music. Maybe it's the album cover itself.
Like you were saying before, those are the chairs that you saw on the marquesinas of people's houses or in the backyards or when you think about people playing dominoes. I actually grew up learning how to play briscas, a card game in Puerto Rico, on those chairs. And so
the album cover is two empty white plastic chairs that are positioned in front of plantain trees. The chairs, officially known as monoblock chairs, date back to the 1940s, when a Canadian designer developed the very first prototype. But today, they're probably best known because they're light, cheap, and stackable. Merida Arrua is a director of undergraduate studies and a professor in Northwestern's Latino and Latina Studies program. She looks at the everyday lives of Puerto Ricans living in Chicago.
It really is kind of the mixture of that with reggaeton and dembow and bomba and plena and salsa, right? And so that for me, it's also about like that is actually what it sounds like when you're in Puerto Rico or if you're at a family gathering. It's always all of those musics kind of combining in one way or another. And so then he kind of connects that with this particular album.
Her mother, who was in her 80s, recently passed away. She was the one to introduce her to Bad Bunny.
She was somebody that was just fascinated by him because of the ways in which he connected being Puerto Rican and also the kind of political and social commitments that he connected to his music. And
so, for her, the chairs mean so much more than just convenient seating options.
The first thing that I think most people might think of is the fact that they're empty. And so that so much of that is about the political and the economic situation on the island, the fact that so many Puerto Ricans have had to leave Puerto Rico, that there's more Puerto Ricans living in the U.S. now than there are in Puerto Rico. And so this idea of loss, right?
Crediting creators of a Bad Bunny college class, she says the chairs also mean something much more urgent.
While it's a warning, it's also kind of like a wake-up call of what's the possibility, like who do we want in those chairs? And so that those chairs could also be an invitation, right, to come back or to see yourself as part of that.
Sophia Nelson is a senior at Syracuse University. She grew up in California, miles away from her mother's birthplace of Chile. Today, her parents have retired to the country, and she spends her breaks going to the place she calls home.
Wait, I forgot the album drop. So then I listened to it when I was, like, with my sister. We were just, like, chilling by the pool. And it's, like, the ultimate summer album, and it's obviously summer down in Chile right now. So we were just listening.
Nelson knows the chairs all too well.
So we're literally, like, sitting by the pool at my grandma's house, and, like, there's, like, 30, like, 20 of those chairs, like, stacked up, like, ready to be whipped out at any party.
Well, Nelson isn't Puerto Rican. She sees her experiences in the album, just like the more than 50,000 posts of people on TikTok sharing cherished memories of loved ones or videos of places that they once called home as the title track of the album plays in the background.
We still get to, like, have had a childhood of returning home, even if it's, like, once a year or every couple years, just to even, like, be able to take pictures and have that, because for a lot of people, that's not the reality. So it's just really, I think, a powerful album that kind of embodies so many experiences, but yet it's still vague enough to like have it be applicable to everyone's story.
Andrea Prado is 23 years old. She left Caracas, Venezuela with her family when she was 12 years old. For her, the cover reminds her of a simpler time when holidays were spent with generations of grandparents and any worries seemed so far away.
Like, although I am from, like, the city in Venezuela, when I will go to my grandparents or my great-grandparents, like, that's just kind of what their backyards look like, so I think...
She has memories of family events that turned into large family parties.
It brings me back to a place of nostalgia and peace and just a time where, in a way, I didn't know that that would also be kind of the last time that I will be with my whole family before, you know, we had to leave the country and whatnot.
While the people and the places of home might be unreachable for so many listeners, Rua reminds us that the memories are just an album away.
And so it really was about what do you do when what you have is just the people that are sitting in those chairs with you, right? And so I think that that is the connection that goes, that when I see those chairs, what I think about.
For WNUR News, I'm Naya Reyes.
Plenty of people are making their in and out lists for the new year. This begs the question, are classic New Year's resolutions unbearably passé, or are they an indispensable part of how we celebrate a new beginning? Reporter and today's producer, Mika Ellison, has the story.
New leaf for the new year is a tradition that goes back to ancient Rome and Babylon. However, in the modern age, people can be a bit more cynical. Some have even dubbed January 17th Ditch Your New Year's Resolution Day. So are New Year's resolutions still relevant? And what role do they play in our increasingly connected society?
New Year's resolution is a commitment for a year. It's a moment of reflection, and it lets people figure out what they care about and what they want to express, what they value, and how they want to change their lives or themselves to align with those values.
That was researcher Blake Hallinan. They're a senior lecturer at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem studying the cross-cultural values of social media. They are also one of the three experts I spoke to who have studied resolutions. Let's start off with Dr. John Norcross, a professor of psychology at the University of Scranton, who has conducted research on how successful our resolutions actually are. In an email, he wrote that, contrary to popular belief, 40 to 44% of people who make resolutions are successful 6 months after making them. 40% is higher than you might expect, but it still means the majority of people aren't sticking to their pledges. So is there something special about the people or resolutions that manage to make it? It might have something to do with the way you phrase them. Martin Oskarsson is a licensed psychologist and doctoral student at Stockholm University. He conducted a year-long study on New Year's resolutions. The study concluded that approach-oriented goals, rather than avoidance-oriented goals, are more successful. In other words, you should phrase your resolution in terms of what you want to do more of, rather than what you don't want to do. While Oskarsson didn't aim to find why approach-oriented goals are more successful, he has a couple theories.
Resolutions such as I'm going to stress less in 2025 gives very little information about what to actually do in order to succeed. When we flip it and phrase that in terms of approach instead, you could consider what you would do more of if you stressed less. Maybe you would spend more time with your family or with friends. Maybe you would read more books. Maybe you would exercise more. And that then that gives you maybe a whole list of activities to try to do more of in 2025 or the year after that to actually bring you closer to something that's probably underlying that you want to achieve.
Oskarsson's study also found that the majority of participants actually were successful in their resolutions. It's possibly because of how they measured that success.
One thing we did that I think people should consider is that we didn't have a dichotomous outcome measure of success. So maybe you did fail with quitting smoking in March, maybe failed again in July, but by December you had, all things considered, made a great change in your intended direction. Then that would qualify you as successful in our study.
Norcross's advice for sticking to your resolution supports that. Treating a slip-up as a total failure falls into what he calls the, quote, abstinence violation effect. That's the idea that one slip proves that keeping the resolution is impossible. He advises sticking to the idea that a slip is not a fall. New Year's resolutions tend to be intensely personal, but sharing our resolutions with friends, family, and the internet has also become a sort of yearly ritual. In 2020, Hallinan and their team scraped tweets in 5 different languages about New Year's resolutions and studied them. They found a surprising new trend: resolutions formatted around self-acceptance rather than self-improvement.
So I think, like, the self-acceptance is a pushback against the conventional resolutions. You have to go out more, you have to do all of these things, and instead takes the form and plays with it to think about changing your relationship with yourself rather than changing what your behavior is.
Weinberg Jr. Sophie Pichardo's resolution wasn't necessarily about self-acceptance, but it matched the energy of Hallinan's findings.
My New Year's resolution is to find a fun New Year's resolution to do every month.
She echoes the idea that resolutions shouldn't necessarily be only to make yourself better.
Do you believe in New Year's resolutions?
Yes. I think, though, no if they're punishments and done for the wrong reasons.
Overall, it seems that instead of fading into the past, New Year's resolutions are changing. Rather than a strict rule to follow or a source of shame, they might provide a surprising break, even from the cynicism of Twitter.
A lot of the conversations are quite supportive. People are excited to hear that. It's a way, sharing what your resolution is a way of disclosing yourself, and people like that, join into that. And so, you know, there might be practical benefits from talking about it, but even if it doesn't help you make the resolution, it still provides an opportunity to share a sense of who you are, have conversations, and get to know the people around you.
Oscarsson said that his study changed his idea of the potential of a resolution as well.
I feel like my perception on New Year's resolutions was that it is as much of a tradition to fail at them as it is to have any to begin with. But looking at our data, we see that that need not be the case. So my perception now is that New Year's resolutions can be a great way of achieving your personal goals and making changes in behavior if you do them right.
Weinberg Jr. Sophie Zhang's resolution fits that perception.
I would like to go to the gym. My roommate says that the gym overflows every January to February with people who have New Year's resolutions to go to the gym, and I aspire to be one of those people.
So it turns out that New Year's resolutions, much like those new gym people, are sticking around. And rather than make fun of those hopeful wannabes, the science says that it might be better for all of us if we join them. For WNUR News, I'm Mika Ellison.
It's a busy time for sports fans, with overtimes, record-breaking times, and most of all, good times. What a time to be alive. Gabe Shumway has this week's sports report.
Hello, I'm Gabe Shumway here with your NU sports report on everything from this past week. The cross-country team was back in action with a meet at the UW Preview in Seattle. Iona grad transfer Holly Smith netted the program's 4th fastest all-time run in the 3,000-meter race, while juniors Skye Ellis came in just a second and a half after Smith, and Radford transfer Chloe Wellings less than 3 seconds after. The three finished 7th, 12th, and 14th, respectively. Ellis performed even better the next day as well, running the mile in 4 minutes and 44 seconds, good for 4th in Northwestern history. After a tough campaign in the 2024 season, wrestling looked to build on what has been a promising season. Veteran grad student Trevor Chumbly was back on the mat for the Cats, taking down Michigan's Chase Saldate, a competitor who got the better of him in their first 2 meetings, but Chumbly has since taken down twice, including Friday's performance. Northwestern also took the first 2 bouts of the evening in both the 125 and 133-pound weight classes. However, despite the hot start, they couldn't hold on as Michigan cruised throughout the latter half of competition, including a statement technical fall by Joshua Heinzelman in the heavyweight match. Men's basketball had 2 matchups over the past week, the first a home thriller against the Maryland Terrapins. With the score knotted up from beginning to end, the game eventually pushed into overtime, and Northwestern took it home on a buzzer-beating catch-and-shoot jumper from Nick Martinelli. However, with the weekend came a road trip against a tough Michigan team and a rematch with Dusty May and Vlad Golden, who Northwestern took down last season when the two were with Florida Atlantic. This showing did not go as well for the Cats. Despite pushing it into overtime, these shots did not fall when the lights were at their brightest, ending in an 80-76 Michigan victory. The women's basketball team had a slugfest at home Sunday against the number 24-ranked Minnesota Golden Gophers. With a Minnesota team whose opponents averaged just 53 points leading up to the match, many thought this would be a low-scoring affair and an uphill battle for the Wildcats, who entered the day at 0-5 in conference play. However, the Wildcats were shining early on thanks to some clutch perimeter shooting and a huge paint presence off the bench in Grace Sullivan. With a lead as high as 16 points in the fourth quarter, many thought the Cats were destined for their first victory in Big Ten play, until the Golden Gophers came rolling back. With a dominant fourth quarter, Minnesota wound up eking out a 5-point win to move on to 17-2 on the season. A busy men's tennis team has three matches to recap, the first two both being on Friday against UIC and St. Joseph's, respectively. While UIC was a hard-fought match that ended in a narrow 4-3 victory, St. Joe's did not put up the same fight, resulting in a 7-0 win for the Cats. They traveled down to Louisville Monday, but they could not close it out on the road, taking a 5-2 loss to the Cardinals. Women's tennis was also at home over the weekend, completing a 7-0 sweep against Butler on Saturday. This included a dominant 6-0 performance by the doubles duo of senior Sydney Pratt and first-year Erica Jessel. And for those interested in attending a Northwestern sporting event, here are a list of those coming up over the next week. Thursday, women's basketball will be against Illinois at 7 p.m., Saturday, fencing will be in South Bend all day for the DeSicco duels, and the women's tennis team will be facing Illinois in Urbana-Champaign at noon. They'll also be home Sunday against DePaul at 11 and against Eastern Illinois at 4. Also on Sunday, wrestling will be home against Minnesota at noon, and men's basketball will be at Illinois at 2. Finally, Tuesday we'll see women's basketball up against Iowa on the road. You'll hear about all those matchups on next week's edition of the NU Sports Report. That wraps up your NU Sports Report for this week. For more information about upcoming games, as well as how you can watch the Wildcats live, visit www.nusports.com. I'm Gabe Shumway for WNUR News.
Hard right now, and it can feel like every piece of news is just another drop in the bucket. If you're feeling strongly or feeling nothing at all, we invite you to feel it with us in our new segment, Well Versed. Here's the first segment of the quarter.
Hi, have you taken a deep breath today? Welcome to WNUR News's new poetry segment, where you'll hear timely poem readings to help you relax, reflect, and reconnect. As we reflect on a shift in presidential power, honor Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and prepare to celebrate Black History Month, Sidney Brown, 2023 Northeast Regional Youth Poet Laureate and former Philadelphia Youth Poet Laureate, shares her powerful poem, Capitol Hill. In this piece, she takes a stance on injustice and invites us to listen.
Capitol Hill, inspired by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. If I had a dream, would you still be sleeping? If you fought for justice, would Black mothers still be weeping? When we stand still, we are seen as a threat. The National Guard intrudes on our peaceful protests, with bulletproof vests bearing arms holding Black shields to block Black bodies. They wear army print. What kind of war are they fighting? Or is it just violence they are inciting? People storm the Capitol with their red caps and all, yet Colin Kaepernick took a knee and his career took a fall. Take a knee in solidarity. Be the change you want to see. Don't come at me with your apologies, then still support racist policies. The time is always right to do what's right. But time is running out. We can't wait for you to stand with us. Silence is just a detour on our freedom bus. It's not my job to teach you how to care. Equality is as essential as breathing fresh air. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Why can't you see? Your inaction is stopping me from being free. Thank you for listening to our new poetry segment. I hope Brown's words inspired you to be the change you want to see in the world, whether that's by sharing a few kind words with a friend today or educating yourself on an issue. We all have a part to play, because the time is always right to do what's right. For WNUR News, I'm Mariah Petway.
That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, wnurnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Mika Ellison, and our reporters are Edward Simon Cruz, Rachel Spears, Naya Reyes, Mika Ellison, Gabe Shumway, and Mariah Petaway. I'm Gabby Shell. Catch our next newscast Friday, January 25th. Now, back to scheduled programming.